and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. I've just been dealing with a corpse of a mouse.
Oh, no. Another one.
I seem to be doing a lot of body disposals at the moment.
I did notice I've got a dead fox up the road about 100 yards from my house. I did think of you.
I just thought there was a dead fox in my garden. I looked out and there's a fox lying in the garden in a very similar position to the dead fox in my brother's garden a few weeks ago. I've tapped the window and he's like, it's just sunbathing today. That's all right. It's very welcome to sunbathe. I did say to it, if you feel a bit peaky, pop next door.
So you think the Croydon fox killer might have visited me in East Grinstead, do you?
Maybe he or she is widening their boundaries.
It was very good. I mean, you'll probably get less detection that way. It's clever thinking. I have had a ropey start to this week. The heat. It's been a drizzly few months, to say the best.
Mm, yeah.
And we finally got some heat. And I don't know. It's sort of melting my brain a bit, I think.
Why? What's happened?
Well, I've been getting flustered, and I was accidentally quite rude to somebody. And I do mean accidentally. It really wasn't on purpose.
Well, you say that. Whenever anyone says I was accidentally rude, it must be very difficult to be accidentally rude. There must be an underlying subconscious rudeness looking to fight its way out.
Well, don't forget, I'm marching around all day in the sunshine beating down on me. So I'm out in it all for hours and hours every day. So it's really getting to me. And my brain is turning to mush because I had a parcel for some very sweet old lady who's been nothing but lovely to me.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her that much, but whenever I do have the pleasure of meeting her, she's nothing but charming.
So what did you call her?
Knocked on her door.
A witch. He's like, "Hey, old witch, here's your parcel, take it."
I knocked on her door. She was very pleased to see me. Yeah. And gave her the parcel and she said, "Oh, thank you very much." And in my head, two things came to mind that I wanted to say. I wanted to say, you're welcome.
Right.
Not difficult, right?
Very easy, that. Two words.
Yeah.
Three syllables.
The other phrase that popped into my mind was, not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Oh.
What came out of my mouth was, after she said, thank you very much, I said to this sweet old lady, you're a problem.
Oh, you're a problem? I thought you were going to say you're not welcome. That's what I thought was coming. Oh, you're a problem.
I blended you're welcome with not a problem and came out with you're a problem.
Yeah, do you know what, love? You're a pain in the arse. There you are. Come to your house every day. You're nothing but sweet and nice to me. But frankly, that's a problem to me.
And the thing was, because I meant it in a very jovial, friendly way, I said this mean thing to this sweet old dear with a big smile on my face.
Of course, yeah.
And she just looked a bit sort of confused and a bit hurt and thought, why has this postie been so rude to me?
Yeah, and enjoying the rudeness. It wouldn't surprise me if there's an official complaint going in about this. An old lady has phoned up the post office headquarters of East Grinstead. Hello, I just had my regular post from tall chap, you know, rather rugged looking. Looks like it's not a compliment, mate. Looks like he could be a hooligan at the weekend. I suspect he goes out bashing people over the head on a Saturday night, something like that. And he called me a problem, and he looked like he was enjoying calling me a problem. I have to say, I've never been a problem to anyone, ever, in my life. No, I'm very sorry, Missy. What would you say your name was? Mrs. Davis. I'm very sorry, Mrs. Davis. We should look into the postman. I've got a feeling his name is Ben Harmer, and you can rest assured you won't be seeing him again.
I think if I got sacked for that and I lost my job, I think I'd probably, on the exit interview, I'd say, did she really say I was rugged?
Yeah. I don't know why I used the word rugged, because I saw rugged as not a compliment. I thought it would make you sound like, you know, unkempt. I don't know, sort of.
I think scruff is the word you're looking for. Unshaven.
Scruff, yeah, scruffy. No pride in his work. No pride in his work at all, is what I saw from his display on my doorstep today. It's brought me to tears, frankly.
You must have had these things where two phrases pop into your head at the same time and your brain sort of tries and goes for them both and some garbled mess comes out. I've worked with you in radio for long enough to know that do it just as much as I do.
Yeah, but I've never called anyone a problem. What I'm interested in is how you got out of this.
Well, I was sort of banking on in my head, maybe I got away with that. Maybe she didn't hear it. And I thought standing here and then explaining what's just happened would be more awkward. So I just very sheepishly walked off.
Yeah, that's even worse. I mean, I think if that was me, I would have not necessarily highlighted the fact that I called her a problem, but I would have said the phrase I wanted to say a second time, as if to sort of indicate she hadn't heard the first time.
So you think I should have said, "You're a problem. You're very welcome, not a problem."
Yeah. You need to put that in, Bill, because if you went, "You're a problem, you're welcome," that would sound... I think that would exacerbate the issue. I don't think that wouldn't
get
you out.
Thankfully, I didn't do that. Oh, God. Can you imagine? "You're a problem, you're welcome."
I do hate that when, if I have a delivery to the door, because I don't know why, it is an awkward interaction.
Did I tell you the one I had during the COVID pandemic in the early days of it?
No.
Somebody, I delivered a parcel, left because of, you know, COVID procedures, left it at the door, knocked, took a few steps back, they opened the door, took the parcel and didn't really say anything to me and closed the door. And then I just heard him inside saying to his wife, "He should be wearing a mask." I thought, one, I'm outside. Two, you ordered me to come to your house.
Well, I suppose during COVID, people wanted to see masks, didn't they? So I suppose there were... But you're right. I mean, you were outside. You were obeying the 2 metre guidelines by being nowhere near them, I suppose.
I know. I tell you what, if there was someone whose door I wish I had knocked on and said, "You're a problem, you're welcome," it would have been him.
Have you ever done that thing on the phone when it might be a fairly sort of important conversation that you're having, but the end of the phone call is always a little bit awkward because you don't quite know how to wrap it up?
Yes. I had a bit of an awkward phone call with my mum the other day because, and again, this was a genuine mistake. My words ran together.
What are a problem?
My words ran together and then I stopped because I changed my mind on something. But it's a bit like, for not wanting to sound rude, it's a bit like when you hear a radio broadcast and somebody pauses halfway through the word "country" and they've said something terrible without meaning to. I was going to say to my mum, "My stuff's ready to bring round for the..." We had a sort of Father's Day dinner, so I was going to say, "All right, mum, my stuff's ready to bring round." And then I realised it wasn't quite all ready, so I stopped myself. So I got as far as, "Oh, it's all right, mum, me..." And it went a bit faster than that. So it sounded like I just said, "Oh, it's all right, mummy," and then just stopped talking. And I thought, I haven't called my mum mummy in some 25 years. I don't know. I started blushing out of nowhere. And I had no real reason to be embarrassed. My mum laughed and then rightly took the piss out of me. My wife laughed and rightly took the piss out of me. But it reminded me of those awful times at school, and I only did it once, where you put your hand up to the teacher and accidentally call them mum.
Yeah, I didn't do that, but it definitely happened at school. There was really an awkward moment with someone at our school. This wasn't a verbal thing, but we never let him forget it. You know, just at school, if something happens, you just never forget it. But
there are some things that we won't let people live down ever.
Yeah. So we were in the school library, I think, if I remember rightly, and as the teacher was walking by, one of our classmates, I don't know whether he was stretching or he's put his arm out, and I must stress, absolutely accidentally, but he ended up essentially sort of groping the teacher, right?
Oh dear.
And I think it was awkward for the teacher and for the pupil, but of course we never let him forget that. You know, every time we saw him there was a reference to him groping the teacher.
How exactly did he manage that?
Well, I don't know if he was stretching or he just, you know, because his back was to the teacher, so he sort of put his arm out And she just sort of walked into his hand, essentially.
Right.
But, you know, at an awkward position. I don't need to go any further.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to guess which sort of zone you're talking, upper or lower.
Well, no. He was sitting down.
You're blushing now, aren't you?
He was sitting down, she was standing up. There was a height differential. Work it out.
So anyway, enough of my shambolic week. How has it been going on your end?
It's all right. I went out in the car for the first time in about 7 months yesterday.
Wow.
And do you know what? It was genuinely scary. It's amazing how quickly you sort of lose confidence when you haven't done it for so long. For about the first half an hour, I was so on edge.
Really?
In the car. About everything. Everything's going through my mind. I'd done some checks on the car before I left. You know, just check the tyres. And although the thing is, there are things that I'm ashamed to say I still don't really understand. I thought I'd better check the oil, right, in the car. So I open the bonnet and I take the dipstick out and I wipe it and I'll put it back in and put it back out. And I look at the level of the oil. And I've had this car a long time. I should know how it all fucking works, right? But there's nothing on it that says, like, maximum or minimum. They're all, like, these little dots. It's like, I don't know whether there's enough oil in this car or not. I don't know. It looked like there was quite a lot of oil, so I took a gamble. But then, you know, there's all that going on. It's like, oh, God, if there's not enough oil, the engine could just blow up at any moment. I keep thinking about, I'm a bit of a dickhead, and if I haven't driven for a long time, I mean, it probably makes me a safer driver, actually, because I'm so alert as to what I'm doing and what other people are doing. I'm so stressed. I had to stop at a shop on the sort of midpoint of my journey, and I was so stressed in the shop. It was like just this residual stress. And I just thought, God, isn't that amazing how just a few months of not doing something that I wouldn't have thought tuppence about before, I suddenly got really stressed about it. And of course all the old habits start coming back and you start noticing all the things that used to annoy you, like, you know, people in 4x4. I'm sorry, I do know people who own 4x4s, but you're fucking idiots. They're all such selfish drivers. Just every time there was a, I was cut up, it was a 4x4. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh God, I'd forgotten this little element of the joy of driving in Croydon town. And it was unbelievably stressful.
Well, I've got to say, you're putting the fear of God into me, because it's approaching the year mark that, for medical reasons, I have not been allowed to drive, and it's nearly up. And I'll have to go through this exact same rigmarole as you, as having to sort of get the courage back of driving. I'm hoping it won't be a problem.
You'll find, I think, for the first, let's say, after about half an hour, I started to chill out. It was fine. It was like I'd never been away from the wheel. But before that, it was just so. But I find it's an age thing as well. I find as I get older, things that never used to stress me out, I get very stressed about. Like, I've got to go to London on Wednesday this week, and I don't go to London very often anymore. I used to go every day for work, and I've got to get the tube. And already, even though it's a good, 36 hours away from where we are right now, I'm beginning to get stressed about getting on the tube, because it's going to be a hot day. It's going to be uncomfortable. I can't stand being pushed and shoved about. I don't like being around other people, really. So the idea of, like, the train is all right, but the tube is such a horrible place. I'm thinking, do I get a bus instead? But the buses aren't much better. And that's beginning to stress me out. And yet, you know, when I used to be in London every day, it wouldn't bother me at all. But you just know that there's so many idiots about and so many people that would annoy me that I know I'm going to get stressed. So I'm going to give myself plenty of time. I've decided I'm going to try and get up there before rush hour, even if I have to go and sit somewhere and wait for my friend for hours. That's what I'm going to do.
And I suppose driving is out of the question, because that would give you some more much needed practice.
Yeah, I'm not driving up to Hammersmith. No way. You know, that's because we know where to park. It would be an absolute nightmare. So no, I wouldn't be doing that.
So another reason, I suppose, you don't want to go to the Hammersmith by car is, well, I mean, I know it already affects you if you stay in where you currently live, but the bloody ULEZ charges as well.
Well, there is that. I did have to pay the ULEZ, of course, when I drove the other day, but it was a one-off sort of, you know, it would have been more money to go on the train to where I was going. It financially was the better option. But yeah, no, actually the whole ULEZ thing, I had to suck it up. It still annoyed me when I came to pay it. By the way, can I just say to people, because I've not had to do it very often, but if you do have to pay the ULEZ, just be aware that there are some, because I almost fell for it. I just put into Google, pay ULEZ, and I went to the first one that came up. And I went through almost to the payment, and then it came up and said £17 something.
How much?
Well, this is it. I thought that's not what it costs. So I came out of that website and realised that this is some, I don't know whether it's a scam thing, but it's another sort of agency, but they obviously put an extra charge on. So if you are going to pay your ULEZ, make sure you go to the TfL site to do it. It's £12.50. People know this. I'm probably just being a bit of a moron about the whole thing, but I just thought you could easily be caught out because you don't even, I almost didn't even look at the costs because I just thought, well, you know, it's going to be £12.50, just pay it. And it was only as I was about to put in the credit card details, I was like, 17, that's not right. So just be aware. Just be aware of that.
Well, that's really handy advice. I will definitely look out for that. I think, failing to do a proper Google search and just picking the top result is exactly how I ended up paying £400 for a locksmith once. So,
there you go.
Do be careful. Oh, that still stings to this day, that does, honestly. But speaking of the ULEZ thing, and I'm not, well, for legal reasons, I'm not condoning it.
Yeah.
But read between the lines. Have you seen the people vandalising all the ULEZ cameras?
Well, there's been a spate of them, people doing various things. Again, I can't condone it at all, but I don't like the idea that some people have been setting them on fire. I think that's a bit extreme, isn't it? I know people are angry, but I think arson is probably not the answer.
I've seen people literally taking some sort of circular saw and just lopping the whole post down.
Wow. I mean, that's a bit...
It's just quite incredible.
It's a bit extreme.
My favourite one, and I shouldn't have... It's a weird thing to have, isn't it, your favourite act of vandalism?
Yeah.
But, definitely
my favourite criminal activity.
My favourite one was people who damaged the ULEZ cameras. And then what they'd do is they would install a bat box on the back of the ULEZ cameras so that... whoever thought of this, it's very clever, so that... a bat would essentially fly up inside into the bat box, and because they're a protected species and there are certain rules on whether they're allowed to roost and things like that and mustn't be disturbed, it meant that they then couldn't remove the bat boxes off the back of the broken ULEZ cameras to fix them because they were a protected species. Sadly, however, I did some research into it, and it technically isn't true. So long as the bat isn't hurt or killed in the process, some sort of bat conservation group have said these can actually be removed. But I thought, what a genius idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a genius idea, but I imagine if they are put up illegally, if they're illegal bat boxes, then there is a case for them to be removed, as long as you say, the bat isn't harmed. And of course, I don't know how many places in London... there are bats.
Yes. I suppose the clever thing, I'm not trying to give advice, but the clever thing would be to sort of put a message on the side of the box saying there is a bat inside this box. It's wired to detonate the moment it's touched or interfered with. You will, by touching this box, kill a bat and committing a criminal offence. Make it a sort of bat saw trap.
No, basically what you're saying is that you planted a bomb. have you wired the bat up to an explosive? Is that what you're saying that you've done?
I'm not saying do it. I'm just saying put that message on it so that then people won't remove it because they don't want to kill a bat, which is a criminal offence, even though there's never really a bat in it.
Yeah, no, if you're saying there's explosives there, the bomb disposal unit will probably be called to remove it anyway. I don't see this being a good way of dealing with the ULEZ camera.
Okay. Okay, so maybe you post a message on the side of the box saying there is a tiny guillotine inside this bat box, which will activate the moment it's interfered with. So that way it's not an explosive, so we can leave the bomb squad aside.
Okay.
I'm just trying to help them, because they've got so far with such a good idea, but it's obviously failing because these conservationists have stuck their beak in and told us it's all bollocks, which has ruined my fun entirely.
Well, what else could you do? I mean, I suppose in London you could do, like, the parakeets, right? There's loads of parakeets. Couldn't you put up something for the parakeets to get into?
Yes. I mean, are parakeets protected in the same way, or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's loads of them now, isn't there? They're better not protected in the same way as a bat.
The problem is, as well, with the whole vandalism thing, as much as I understand why people are doing it.
The problem with the vandalism thing is that it's not a good idea, full stop.
Well, it's ultimately, if you think about it, surely the end result is going to be it's going to cost them hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to eventually fix and replace all of these broken cameras. And who do you think is going to pay for that ultimately? The ULEZ charge will go up, and we're going to have to pay even more to repay the debt of the broken cameras, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, no, I do think that people, that it's all, you know, it's all a good bit of fun to talk about it, but I genuinely think the people that do these things, they're fucking dickheads. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
Yes, I do, because I think anything like that is not a good way of dealing with it. You know, what are you actually achieving? Because, like you say, the cameras will be replaced eventually, charges will go up, or the road tax will go up. We'll end up paying for it all in the long run, and I just think you're not making any, you know, sensible way of dealing with it.
But isn't part of introducing a law that you can only do it if the general public will accept it as a law? So if it just was relentless that every single one of these ULEZ cameras was torn down, that would show that the public aren't accepting these cameras. So the whole policing by consent thing, if everyone's flouting these cameras and not accepting them, then they can't force it through anymore, can they?
Well, I don't know whether that's really a thing that would happen. Is it?
I just don't like the cameras. I don't like the fact that you can't leave your house without being charged £12.50 to pop down the road. It's ridiculous.
Well, no, it is a ridiculous thing. I just never see any kind of vandalism or violence a way of dealing with it, really. I mean, I don't mind if people want to put, like, a bag over the camera, you know, like something like that, but chopping them down, burning them, you know, it's a ridiculous way. I mean, I got really annoyed the other day at the Just Stop Oil dickheads putting paint on Stonehenge. And I just think we're sort of getting to the point now where, you know, I would sit with a Just Stop Oil protester and say that I get what you're saying. No.
They made a very good point against Stonehenge, that famous gas guzzler.
Yeah.
Stonehenge. Yeah. What the fuck were they doing?
But you sort of want to sit these people down and say, no, you know, I get what you're saying. Right? We're all about a greener world. It's a much better idea, yes. But by putting some orange paint on Stonehenge is achieving fuck all. I don't know what you think you are achieving. Going into a gallery and putting some orange paint on a painting. I don't know. Nobody is going, oh, well, now they've done that.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine, like, after the general election, whoever gets in, right, we're at their first cabinet meeting, sit down and go, well, welcome to the new government for the United Kingdom. A couple of things on the agenda, obviously, the NHS, that's obviously very high up on the agenda. And you know, these people have put orange paint on Stonehenge. Well, I think because of that, we're going to ban all oil from today. It's not going to happen, is it? It's not going to happen because some... Did you see those two old ladies a few weeks back? Like, one of them was a vicar, and she was about 85, and they tried to chisel through the glass where the Magna Carta is stored.
I did see that.
And they, because of their age, bless her, they were desperately struggling to get any power in the hammer and chisel.
I didn't know what was going to break first, the glass or her forearm. I thought it's 50-50 at this point.
And I just thought, what are you, just what the fuck are you doing? Between you, there was probably about 160 years worth of life experience, surely that would be enough to say that this is achieving nothing. All right, it's got you on the news, people are talking about it, but it's not solving the issue, is it? I mean, I'm not saying I've got the answer to how you solve the issue. I'm not. I get protests, I get go and march, I get all that.
I even understand their cause. I just think stop being such absolute wankers about it.
And
you honestly, like you say, you honestly think that the government are going to hear some, you know, multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry or pound industry like oil, but some twat's throwing orange paint up Stonehenge. All right, let's knock it on the head then, shall we? Forget it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's got to be knocked on the head, but it can't be done overnight, and just by throwing paint over something isn't going to make it happen any quicker. It really isn't.
No.
So just understand that. But I don't
know. Yes, right. You might get them on the news. They might appear on the news briefly.
Yeah.
But instead of thinking they're raising awareness about oil, we're actually saying, what a twat these protesters are. What fucking idiots.
I tell you what I would do if I won the general election, if I was in charge. First thing I'd do, first thing I'd bring into law as the new ruler of the United Kingdom.
Scrap the ULEZ cameras?
I'd ban orange paint.
Trev, you and I have used AI before to varying degrees of success on this podcast, haven't we?
Yeah, we've done the whole soap opera thing. That was fairly successful. I tell you what, it's growing all the time, isn't it? The whole AI thing. I was at a media and technology show recently.
Ooh.
Because I go to where all the cool people hang out.
I noticed I didn't get an invite, but fine, carry on.
And Dan Snow was there. You know Dan Snow, the historian and TV presenter?
Yes.
So he was there, and I sat on his seminar, and him and his team were talking about how they use AI in their productions now. And what was amazing was they said, well, because Dan Snow has to do a lot of travelling for some of his documentaries and stuff that he does, so he's not always available if something he's recorded, the script has to change for some reason, they just need to re-record another line. And they now use AI to recreate his voice to just put that line in. But to demonstrate this, they played several pieces of audio and said, can you tell if this is Dan or AI? They ended up all being AI, but the last one they had was incredible. They had Dan Snow singing an Elvis song.
Wow.
And it was so incredible. It was like, I just thought you could do anything now with AI. It's getting so good that it's becoming scary, but it is becoming so good for that sort of thing.
And it is only going to get better.
It is only going to get better. I mean, I think for actors, it's obviously a massive issue, and for voice actors, but even for singers, you know, there's, who was it this week? Sheryl Crow saying that, because she, a new album's kind of about the dangers of AI and that kind of thing. And she was saying, because someone sort of revived the voice of, is it Tupac Shakur, maybe?
Yeah.
The rapper, or one of the rappers who was shot dead. I mean, yeah, there's too many of them today, but one of them. And have sort of used AI to recreate his voice. And she was saying, I don't think that's right. It's disrespectful and it shouldn't happen. But I don't know. I'd quite like to think that maybe in 100 years' time, way past my existence, that someone's still maybe using my voice for something.
I mean, like you say, some of it's impressive. It's only going to get better. I am quite enjoying the slightly shite stage that it's at the moment, though, because Google have just released one of their new AI robot things that you can talk to, or it'll offer you some replies to your Google searches, or, you know, just some helpful advice, things like that.
Okay.
And this thing they've rolled out, it needs some work, to say the least, because what it's doing is it's scouring the internet for answers that it can provide people asking questions, and it's scanning things like Reddit, forums.
Oh, God, okay.
You see the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be full of just bile and hatred, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah. And just generally nonsense. So I've got a few examples of people who have been sort of testing how good this new AI is.
Okay.
Someone asked it some advice on making a pizza.
Yeah.
And this Google AI bot thing came back and said, use non-toxic glue in your pizza sauce. That will stop the cheese from falling off.
Well, I mean, it's got a point, hasn't it?
It has a point, I suppose. Somebody asked it, how many rocks should I eat? Which I feel is, it's unhelpful to try and, you know, trick the AI or catch it out. But the answer, very thoughtful, you should eat at least one small rock per day.
Wow.
Rocks are a vital source of minerals, vitamins, and they're important to digestive health.
Well, I mean, again, it's not a falsehood, is it, that there are lots of minerals? And the thing is, it depends what rock it's asking about. It says how many rocks.
Bit of Blackpool rock.
Well, yeah. AI has assumed it means rocks that you find out in nature. It could mean drugs, of course.
Okay. Well, since you're defending it, try and defend this one. Somebody didn't ask a question. They just simply stated, I'm feeling depressed.
Right.
They hit the search button and the AI came back and said, there are many things you can try to do to deal with your depression, including jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So I think Google might need to pull this pretty quick, because that's some fairly unhelpful advice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... God, that's... Yes. That's awful.
You were defending this a minute ago.
Well, I can't defend that. That's awful, because I... That, again, this is the problem, isn't it, with AI? Because the thing about AI, as far as I'm aware, and I don't know it, you know, I don't know how it all really works, but it learns from us, essentially. So because we're all...
Yes, and we're the arseholes, that's the problem.
And, you know, there are enough people that would respond like that to someone calling for help on a social media site. You know, there'd be a lot of people saying nice things and helpful things and trying to help, but there'd be some arseholes that would write stuff like that. And that's how AI is learning. And that's the danger of AI. It's learning from us.
That's where its downfall is going to be, the human race.
Exactly.
Somebody else asks, how did Socrates die?
Oh, no, is this the famous, I don't know if there's a myth about a bird dropping an egg on his head or something.
I've heard a similar thing, but that's not the answer that Google's AI model came out with. Google suggested that Socrates was killed for saying... How come it's called ancient Greece if it's today, right now?
Right. So, I don't even get that. It's not... What's it trying... Is it putting that out as a factual thing?
No. I think it's a fairly ropey joke that Google has believed.
Right, okay. Let me just...
I'm saving one of my favourite ones for last, but we'll just do this one. Someone said to it, name foods that end in M-E.
Okay. I'm trying to think of some now.
Then. Well, I'll give you a little thinking time. Come on, Trev, name a food that ends in M-E.
Sesame. Sesame oil.
Lovely answer.
Sesame. I can't think of anything else that ends M-E.
Well, I'll tell you what. Sesame is a fine answer. You thought of that pretty quick. That's great. Google came up with peanut butter.
God.
Peanum buttum. Jorkum.
What's it? What?
Jorkum. J-O-R-K-U-M. Jorkum.
But well, hang on. I thought wasn't it supposed to be N-D-M? Or M-E?
No, it was supposed to end M-E.
M-E, right? And was it called Jorkum?
Name foods that end in M-E.
Yes.
We've got peanum buttum.
Yes.
Jorkum.
Well, I don't even know what that is. What is it trying to say?
And cream of Ketcunt.
Well, hang on. I'm not prepared to look past Jorkum yet. What is it trying to say?
I don't know. I mean, is it supposed to be like jerked ham, jerk bacon, Jorkum? I don't know.
Jorkum.
Yes, and cream of Ketcunt.
Yes, all right. Fucking hell.
None of which... End in M-E.
No. I mean, I'm glad I was waiting for you to tell me that it had come up with some dreadful thing about the disease, M-E. That's what I thought we were heading. That's where I thought we were heading with this, the sick arsehole that AI seems to be.
now, this one, this is the last one I'll do, and I can't really explain how it found this answer or why it thought this was the answer. Somebody asked it, for some reason, what's the best way to transport oranges 1,000 kilometres. If you guess the answer, Trev, that Google came up with, I'll give you the money myself.
I don't know. I'm trying to think, obviously, the best way to transfer oranges. How many kilometres?
What's the best way to transport oranges 1,000 kilometres?
No, I could get into all kinds of proper answers, but I'm obviously not going to. What did it say? What the fuck did it say?
The thing is, the answer it gave raises up so many more questions, but the answer it gave, feed a horse 2,000 oranges at once. One for each kilometre travelled, and sell the remaining 1,000 oranges at the market.
What? Hang on. Oh, my God. What?
It doesn't make any sense, mate. I've read it about 8 times. It makes no sense.
Just say it again.
Feed a horse 2,000 oranges at once.
What do you mean at once? What does it mean at once? Are you just ramming oranges down the horse's throat all in one go? You're not going to. The
this
horse
will, be, one
will
orange.
Be deceased before you've got past about 3 oranges, I'd imagine.
This will be one orange for each kilometre travelled. So bear in mind, we only wanted to travel 1,000 kilometres, but we force-fed a horse 2,000 oranges at this point.
And then made it walk 2,000 kilometres.
And then sell the remaining 1,000 oranges at market. Now, I would say, okay, 2,000 minus 1,000 would leave you 1,000, but at the beginning of the instruction, it was feed a horse 2,000 oranges at once.
Well, no, so it's assuming we've got 3,000 oranges.
Yes!
2,000 to shove down a horse's throat. And 1,000 to sell. Is the horse supposed to be dragging the cart with the 1,000 to sell on? Because I can't.
Doesn't elaborate.
I can't see a horse being able to move that. Even if it survives the force feeding of 2,000 oranges. Surely, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But there must be some medical condition that would come on from vitamin C overdose. Surely there would be. I mean, it would never get scurvy ever again, that horse, the rest of its life. But the horse wouldn't survive being force-fed 2,000 at once. I mean, that's what it's... You can't... There's no way you could do it unless you are sewing them into its stomach. There's no way you get... There's the phrase at once. I mean, you can't feed... Because by the time you get to number 2,000, number one has been digested, probably. So it's not at once, is it?
Well, also, I imagine... I mean, I don't know if you know this. Horses are quite big units. And I'm imagining if they don't want an orange rammed down its throat, they'll probably do something to stop you.
You don't think that's what Princess Anne was trying to do today? For anyone who hasn't heard the news, she's okay. But she's a horse-related incident, is what we're being told. Maybe she was trying to force-feed the horse 2,000 oranges. I don't know.
This podcast goes out on Wednesday night, mate. You've got 2 days to hold your breath if that doesn't become a very tasteless joke.
It'd be sweet like an orange. Sweet like an orange. I tell you what, there's a weird AI thing that I heard this week. A company are developing, or have developed, an AI system for people in call centres. And it's for those moments when the people phoning the call centres, let's say you're phoning to complain about a service, your bill or something. And we all know how frustrating call centres can be when you've been on hold for half hour, you get through to somebody who's pretty much no help at all, then you get cut off, then you have to phone. The whole course, that's something that I get stressed about. If I have to make a phone call and you know there's a call centre involved, I get stressed about that because you've got to basically map out half a day to get anything done.
God, yes. Yeah.
But this, so, you know, often anger can arise from the person calling the call centre and maybe... bad language might be used. Sometimes even there's threatening. I'm not condoning it, but some people threaten things. You know, it all gets rather heated at times. So a company have developed this AI system which will recognize certain tones and certain words. They've recorded over 10,000 pieces of voice data, including screams, accusations, threats, demands for apology, all those sorts of things. So it will recognise that that's what is being heard.
Sorry, I'm just imagining like Ray Winston or Alan Ford phoning up to having to sort of reorganise their car insurance and being red flagged.
They used 10 actors, right? I'd love to have been one of those actors. Like last week I was auditioning for The Archers. I'd like to audition for this week just to sit in a studio for half a day. And they say, now, Mr. Smith, can you maybe make a threat to a call centre employee? Yes, I'm going to fucking come down there and sort it out if you don't get my bill sorted. Thank you. And now can you maybe do a demand for an apology? I mean, what a day's work that would be, right? But then what this now does...
It'd be like therapy, wouldn't it?
It would be great therapy, and I'd get paid for it, presumably, which would be a great thing. What the AI does is it recognises those words, and for the person in the call centre, it will soften the tone, which will help reduce the stress and anxiety for the people in the call centre.
Really?
Yeah, it will transform what's being said into a more natural or polite tone.
So they still have to hear, thank you for taking my call. I would just like to let you know that you're a complete bastard, and you ruined my life, and I just thought I'd let you know, so fuck off, and go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
So nice and friendly and soft, but still just as aggressive.
Yeah. There'll be that terrible moment where someone goes, yeah, you're a problem. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations of things for you to watch. Got anything, Ben, for us this week?
I do. A couple of TV programmes. Channel 4, I think we probably recommended it before, but 24 Hours in Police Custody, another series of that has been out. It's absolutely brilliant. I've caught a couple on, I think, all four, the Channel 4, whatever the service is called.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of my favourite shows, that. I'm not always complimentary about police officers, but when you watch some of particularly the murder investigators and the depths they go to get the evidence, I find it quite incredible, really.
I mean, I don't know anyone really who could watch an episode of that and not get interested and involved in it. It's such a good show. I say that very biased as a big true crime person. Speaking of true crime, on Netflix there's a show called When Missing Turns to Murder, which is missing in persons investigations that take a turn for the worse. The clue's in the name if you haven't figured it out. But that's on Netflix, and that's also very, very good, worth a watch.
Okay, well, I've got to say, most of my recommendations this week are documentaries. I've had a bit of a documentary week here, Ben.
You do like a documentary, don't you?
I know, but two of them are true crime stuff.
Oh! So
I'll tell you the first one that isn't true crime, because I'm not sure this is going to be up your alley. But this was interesting.
Well, that's all right. The recommendations aren't for me. They're for everyone.
This was on BBC Two over two parts, both available on the iPlayer, called Chinook Zulu Delta 576. And it was...
rolls off the tongue.
It was the story of a terrible Chinook helicopter crash in 1994 in the Mull of Kintyre, right? Terrible accident. But the cover-up that went on afterwards. Now, as you know, I don't like conspiracy theories. I don't like that whole idea that people are always trying to control things. But honestly, the RAF, the Ministry of Defence, just appalling. Absolutely appalling. They basically tried to blame the two pilots for the accident.
Oh, right.
When it wasn't their fault at all. And people were telling them it wasn't their fault. And successive governments, successive ministers of defence refused to have the inquiry reopened. It is the most extraordinary thing. You just think, why does this keep happening? Why is there massive things that happen and cover-ups take place? I guess it's always the case with people that they're trying to cover up. But someone says on the documentary, said, do they not understand that the truth would always out eventually? The truth would always out, and it would be much better for the reputation of the RAF, the Ministry of Defence, the government, if they actually said to start with, okay, look, there were failings, there were mistakes made. You know, their reputation would actually be enhanced by that admitting
completely,
that fact, rather than basically going, no, it wasn't that.
Absolutely. The admission of a mistake is far better than the cover-up and the scandal of the cover-up. That should be easy, but it's reminding me of the Tom Hanks film Sully, where they they grilled him endlessly about, well, theoretically, you could have flown it back to the airport instead of landing it in the Hudson. And yeah, if you haven't seen that, there's another recommendation. It's very, very good film.
Yeah, very good. Right, well, two true crime things this week on Netflix. It's a documentary called Lover, Stalker, Killer. Now, if you thought Baby Reindeer was bad, right? This is stalking to the next level.
Ooh.
It's basically a man, I won't give too much away, all I'll say is a man is stalked relentlessly, and it's just an incredible story. It's unbelievable.
I'll definitely have, you know what, I'm making a note of that in my phone right now.
Okay, and the other true crime documentary, it was on Channel 4 over three parts, called The Fall Skydive Murder Plot. Now, a few months back, I recommended a fairly old documentary that was on Netflix. I think it was an ITV one originally, about this story. It was a woman who whose parachute didn't open, and she survived the fall, and then it turned out that it was possibly her husband had sabotaged the parachute, right? And in the original documentary that I recommended, the wife didn't talk, she didn't speak out, but now she's speaking out, and it's a brilliant documentary.
Am I right, I don't want to spoil anything, but am I right in thinking there was a large life insurance policy taken out before this accident?
There was a large life insurance policy taken out, yes. So yeah, that's worth a watch. And the final thing I'm going to recommend is a movie I watched, I don't know if you remember, I recommended a few weeks ago a film called The Last Rifleman. It was about the old man who escaped his old people's home to go to a D-Day commemoration.
Yes.
That was loosely based on a true story. And I said at the time there was another film with Michael Caine and Glenda Jackson in called The Great Escaper. When I finally got around to watching that, this is actually the story of the real man who escaped his old people's home. Brilliant film. Glenda Jackson, I think it was her last film. I think Michael Caine has said it's his last film because he's getting on a bit. They are both brilliant in it. It's a great film.
Nice one. I'll have to give it a look.
So there we are. Lots to watch. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Bill on X. By the way, can I just say something about X?
Go ahead.
That's what I'm talking about. This is pissing me off.
Is this Cautionary Corner? A late one for Cautionary Corner?
Well, it's just a moan about X. So a few weeks ago, bear in mind I look after our account, and I've got my own Twitter thing that I don't use very often, but it's there. And both of them demanded from me a date of birth for the accounts. Right?
Right.
So I put dates of birth in. It's all saved. And I would say every other day, it still comes up and tells me, need a date of birth. It's there. It's fucking there. What is wrong with you? Fucking billions of pounds it's worth, and it's shockingly bad. Can you not see it's there?
What, has that made you feel better now?
Yeah, thank you. I've got it off my chest. We'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well. Take it easy.
Bye.